What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Lawyer You Know podcast. I'm your host, attorney Peter Tragos, and on this podcast, we break down the trials and cases you care most about so that you can understand how the American criminal and civil justice system works. We try to make sure you understand your rights by answering your questions as, well, a lawyer that you know. So we want to walk you through this process, and we can do it together. Make sure you get in the comments or in the chats to ask the questions that have been burning in your minds. And while this is not legal advice, it's always exciting. So buckle up for another episode of The Lawyer You Know. What's up, everybody, and good morning. A lot earlier than we're used to here for a little special, as the jury is reportedly out at Moselle at this time, looking around, seeing what they can find out, seeing what they can learn, seeing what they know about this case after all the evidence and everything that they've heard. It's going to be interesting to hear if this affects them and how it does if we ever hear from them in the future. But closing arguments are upon us. We will be listening to those this afternoon and discussing them tonight. But there's been a lot of talk about the issues in the case, the defenses made, the holes poked, the alternate theories. What has the state actually proved? And how can they tie it all together? So just as a thought exercise, and people are asking why I'm not doing this for both sides. I mean, I didn't take very much time with this, probably about 30 minutes, and there's no way I can begin to hit 6 weeks of evidence. So I kind of did a little outline. I'll explain to you kind of why I did it the way that I did and how it kind of comes together when you're preparing a closing argument like this and what you have to think about and do and, you know, pick and choose, and you're not going to be able to hit everything. But when you do something like this, I felt like it was the better idea to do it for the state, since I do at this point feel like my vote would firmly be not guilty. I think there are a lot of holes, a lot the state didn't prove, and a lot of reasonable arguments that the defense made. But if I found myself in a situation like this as the AG, feeling like I had the right guy, I had the evidence, how do you put it together in a compelling state? And one of the things is to trim it down, get rid of a lot of the arguments that I'm going to call smoke and mirrors in this closing statement or this closing argument, to try to get out of a lot of the arguments that make it confusing, pare it down, dumb it down, whatever you want to say, and really try to focus in on what is going on. So no, it's not a premiere. It's live. This is live, everybody. So I'll be taking questions and comments throughout and probably later on. But thank you, Judy. So yes, this is live. And we are going to be, you know, talking together about this, but a lot of it is going to be kind of me talking through an outline somewhat of a closing argument and some of the points that I think are really important to hit by the prosecution. And I very purposely left out a lot of arguments, which I would do if I was the state, especially on first close, and then see what you have to respond to in rebuttal. So how do you start your closing argument if you're the state, if you're the AG? What's the story here? What's the story? You heard a lot of evidence about a lot of different things, but what is the story? How did these murders occur? And if you're watching this, hit that like button and subscribe. We've done a few things like this in other trials, like what would we do for cross? What kind of outline would we have for this or that? Thought it'd be fun to do it for the state. But here we go. So what is the story here? How did this happen? Well, we know, let's talk about what we know, right? And what the evidence actually proved in this case. And we know that Alex Murdoch specifically summoned, requested, whatever you want to call it, Maggie and Paul to come to Moselle the night of June 7th. He wanted them there and just them. He didn't call Buster. He didn't call Randy. He didn't call John Marvin. He didn't call anybody else in his family but Paul and Maggie. And he specifically called them to Moselle. And you may be thinking, why Moselle? They have three different properties at least. They got a beach house, they got a main house, then they got Moselle, which is the hunting property. Moselle had all the room in the world. Nobody could hear anything that happened at Moselle, as you heard from Dale Davis, who lived just a mile and a half away, and he didn't hear anything that happened this night. Moselle is a property that has 25 plus guns at the Murdoch family disposal at any time, left all over the property. It would not have been weird if guns were left around. The kennels. And why the kennels? Well, we know the kennels is where there's a lot of biological material of animals, whether it's dogs or hogs or doves or chickens or whatever. It wouldn't be odd to see blood or other, like I said, biological material in those areas. Also, a big hose there for cleaning and washing off that is used literally every day at Moselle. So why not the beach house? Why not the main house? Why Moselle? It's pretty clear. That's where it would be easiest to commit and cover up a crime like this. So what did he do? Well, he makes sure that once they're all there together, they go to the kennels without him. Plausible deniability. He was not there. They went to the kennels. And then he could show up later in the golf cart to commit these crimes. He goes down to the kennels. And instead of committing the crimes right away, he sees the commotion. The dogs are out. The kennels are open. Bubba's got a bird in his mouth. But little did he know that Paul was taking a video at the exact time that Murdoch was there at 8:44, 8:45 p.m. And it's clear he didn't know this because he was very detailed in his explanation of many of the events, some of which made sense and stuck to the timeline, some of which didn't. But it was clear he did not know this video was being taken at the time. Because once he did know the video existed, he totally changed his story, which we heard at trial. And at trial, he even admits that he didn't leave immediately when the video was taken, but he at least had to get the chicken out of Bubba's mouth, put the chicken down, say something to Maggie and Paul and leave. So it puts him in the 8:47-ish range at least before he leaves. But let's talk about what we know happened. And this is evidence that has come out to show we may not know when exactly certain things happened, but we know that when everybody arrived back on the scene later, law enforcement, friends, families, lawyers, the dogs were back in the kennel. The hose was put away. So when did those things happen? The timeline perfectly matches up that at 8:45, Alec is there, taking a video of the dog's tail. 8:46, he puts the chicken down. And the 8:47 to 8:49 range, when we look at the timeline, we see, and I have the timeline here. I don't really know how helpful it'll be to look at, but I might as well put it up here so we can kind of look at it together. I would definitely do this if it was a real closing argument. So we look at this timeline, and we know that from 8:47 to 8:49, Paul and Maggie are still using their phones. But we also know that at some point, the dogs were put back in the kennels, and the hose was wrapped. So the most likely explanation for this and what the evidence showed in this case was that that is the time period the dogs were put back in the kennel and the dogs listened to Alec. Everybody testified to that. So it takes Alec a couple minutes to put the dogs in the kennel and to grab his weapon. Because at 8:49, and this is where you can use your cadence and slow down and get real quiet and get loud. And I'm sure Waters is the one doing the closing argument. He will do this. But at 8:49-ish, both of their phones lock forever. We know Maggie's outside the kennels at this point. Alec fires two shots, killing Paul. Switches weapons. Because there's no doubt about this. And make no mistake, this was absolutely planned. Down to the minute. Down to the fact that I'm not going to go down to the kennels with them. I'm going to drive the golf cart later. And as part of his plan, he brought two weapons to make it look like two shooters. After he finishes with Paul, he puts down the shotgun, picks up the 300 blackout, goes outside, and hunts down his wife. And there was a lot of talk about why, and we're going to get to why after we get to what happened. But after this, in the 8:49 to 8:53 time frame, when he commits these crimes, he picks up Maggie's phone to make sure she didn't call anybody when she heard the shots to Paul. And at that point, he decides to take Maggie's phone, put it back in the golf cart. He reconsiders later, but that explains the steps on Maggie's phone after she was dead. It's the only explanation. He brought a change of clothes down with him in the golf cart because we know that less than an hour before the murders occurred, we have this photo and we put him up on the screen of the Snapchat where he's wearing that green shirt and khaki pants, which is an outfit that was never seen again after this day. As testified to by Blanca and everyone else, nobody has ever seen that outfit again. He cleans himself off. He cleans off the guns. He wraps them in the blue tarp and hides them in a place that only he knew. He changes his clothes, heads back up to the house, and between 9:02 and 9:06, he takes, where is it? 283 steps. Plenty of steps to ditch the clothes and put them somewhere on his property, thousands of acres, that no one would ever be able to find them. And after he finishes doing the deed and covering it up, he gets in his car and immediately starts setting up his alibi. And I'm using words like setting up his alibi purposefully because how many times did we hear him say, "You will check the data. You will see on my phone. You will see in my car. You will see where I was when I was there." He knew the data was going to be found. He knew the data was going to be used. And that is why, starting right at 9:06, that's why he left his phone at the house for an hour, which he never did, and everybody testified to it. And that's why he started making call after call and text after text as close to the time of the murders as he could. And when you think about some of the lies that he told, oh, it was, you know, an hour and a half and then 45 minutes before that, or talking to Miss Shelley and say, it was about 40, 45 minutes, right? Not 20 to 30 minutes or 15 to 20 minutes or whatever he wanted her to say. Blanca, let's talk about the clothes a little bit. A lot of those lies may not make sense now that he's admitting he was at the kennels at 8:44 or 8:45. But if you think back to when the lies were told, only he knew when the time of death was. Only he really knew at that point how important those lies were. And they were important. And they did make it more difficult on law enforcement to put together a timeline. Especially and up until they got that video. So all of those lies, while they are admittedly lies now, back then they were part of the alibi and part of the cover-up. And what does he do when he gets back? Kind of scroll ahead here. We know he drives 80 miles an hour to Alameda, visits with his mom, makes sure he's got an alibi. Shelley sees him. He talks to Miss Shelley, drives back 80 miles an hour, faster than he drove anywhere that day, literally. And then he gets back, goes to the house first, then gets to the kennels at... let's get the exact time here. He leaves the main house at 10:05 and he gets to the kennels at 10:05:57. He arrives at the kennels. Now, there are certain things we need evidence for and other things that take common sense that you have to actually get out of your car and walk somewhere. That's going to take a few seconds. And at 10:06:14, which is 17 seconds after arriving at the kennels, he's calling 911. Yet, what does he tell 911? He tells them he already checked their pulse, tried to flip Paul over. Paul's phone popped out of his pocket, and he put it down on the back of his pocket. A literal and physical impossibility that that happened the way that he said. But he is trying to sound like a concerned father who just showed up to the scene of his family brutally murdered. The problem is, and again, common sense would tell us, a distraught father would be laying in the biological material, hugging and clutching his son or his wife, finding them in that condition, not checking their pulse when you can see pieces of brain on the floor. You would be covered in their blood for one last hug, one last embrace, because you'll never get that again. That's what a grieving father would have done. And once everyone shows up and he's clean as a whistle, not a drop of blood on him, the deed is done. He ditches the guns later, but he has thousands of acres to hide things where no one else would find them. So why did he do it? Why? That's a big question. Why did he do it? You saw pictures and videos and her testimony of this happy family, this perfect family, because that is what Alec Murdoch wanted people to think. Nobody knew the truth about what was going on with him. And we heard that from just about every witness in this trial. We heard that they loved each other. They did everything together. He bought those boys whatever they wanted. Yet we knew the truth was he was stealing millions of dollars to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on his drug addiction for the last 20 years that all these people that thought he had the best life didn't know about. None of them knew about it. So how are we supposed to believe that they knew what this family was like and what life was like for the Murdochs when they didn't even know the deepest, darkest secrets that have been going on for years? So there's drugs, which the family knew about and argued about and just pled with him to go to rehab, to detox. They had the boat case, the BUI, which Alec made sure law enforcement knew about as a potential motive in the case. But in reality, that case happened 2 years before this murder. So if there was some vigilante, why would they wait 2 years? Why would they do it now? How would they know Paul and Maggie were even there? The boat case, the financial crimes, he was stealing money. It was coming to a head literally that day. And we knew that this happy family was not so perfect as Maggie was living in another house. The Hampton community had turned on them. She was fearful for their money issues. And it was all coming down on Alec Murdoch. The shame, his family name, his family legacy, all because of mistakes Paul had made and mistakes Alec had made. And not too long after, he made the decision to take his own life, because that's what he does. He takes out anybody, including his family, including himself, that would hurt the family name. This isn't just any old family. This is the family that ran Hampton County since 1910. And he was next in line. So that's what happened and why it happened. But I think what Alec Murdoch didn't do is also really important. What he didn't do at the scene, going up to them and hugging them. And I think so, just so you know, just in this mock closing argument, right? And that's what we're talking about. I see a lot of you saying, no way, not guilty, not convinced. I agree with you, because again, my vote would be not guilty. But you have to give an outline. You have to give a story of what happened, and you have to tell the jury why. Motive is not part of the cause of action or the crime charged, but you have to, in this situation, give the jury a reason why. So that is just incredibly important. You have to explain what happened and how it happened. You can't give all of these what ifs and possibilities. You have to explain how it happened. And you notice how I didn't talk about the trajectory of the bullet and where they were standing and all. I don't want to talk about all that. But in addition, you also have to poke some holes in people that may be believing what the defense says. And then explain what reasonable doubt is, and you have to prove beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. So let's hit a couple other things I would wrap into this closing. So what he did is very important. That's what the evidence showed. But what he didn't do was also incredibly important. He didn't hug him like we talked about. He didn't say, if only I was there for 3 more minutes, maybe I could have stopped this. He didn't worry about Buster's safety. He didn't actually go into shock and just go blank and not be able to speak or talk or just lay there on the ground, just a bumbling mess. No, he was able to call everyone on his list, get all of his friends, his lawyers, his family members down there, talk to Sled, ask them certain questions, tell them what he thought they wanted to hear. And he didn't remember the last conversations he had with his wife and son after this tragedy, just an hour and a half before, and he couldn't remember what their last conversations were. And then you explain reasonable doubt, and you go something like, here are just 5 completely unreasonable scenarios we've heard from the defense. A bunch in smoke and mirrors that they are going to try to convince you is reasonable doubt, when in fact, they are totally unreasonable. First, that there were 2 killers, vigilantes, who randomly showed up and were there when no one else but Paul and Maggie were there. They showed up when Alec wasn't there. They showed up when Paul and Alec just happened to be the one time they weren't carrying a rifle with them, or Paul didn't have his favorite shotgun right by his side. That was lucky, wasn't it? They found family guns. They didn't even have to bring their own weapons for these murders that they planned. They got lucky and found 2 separate guns, 1 for each of the shooters. And they were able to take and use those guns, because that would make it look like it was somebody from the Murdoch family, because the casings match the Murdoch family weapons. So that was lucky. Totally unreasonable, but lucky. And of course, they wanted to frame Alec Murdoch, right? That's why they used the family weapons. But if that was the case, why wouldn't they just leave the guns there? I'm sure they had Alec Murdoch's DNA on them. They were his family guns. They probably had Buster's DNA on them too. Maybe they would have thought it was him. That would have caused even more tragedy to the family than just committing these crimes. Totally unreasonable that 2 murderers would show up without weapons, would use family weapons, and then also get rid of them. Makes no sense. Number 2, that 2 human being adults that were 5'2" committed this crime. Are there adults that are 5'2"? Absolutely. But we have heard the defense throw out names like C.D. Rowe, Curtis Eddie Smith, the victims of the boat case, and exactly none of those people are 5'2". Exactly none of those people are 5'4". It's all smoke and mirrors. It does not make common sense, especially when you compare it to somebody got on his knees, somebody being Alec Murdoch, and that fits the measurements perfectly. Somebody got in a different shooting position, and that fits the evidence perfectly. An unreasonable story does not create reasonable doubt. Number 3, the explosion of the shot going backwards instead of forwards. Where Alec Murdoch was standing when he pulled the trigger. All of those arguments are purely to confuse you. to muddy the waters. Because whether the shot was fired up through Paul's shoulder or whether Alec Murdoch stood behind Paul and pointed the gun at his head, that second theory is actually even more plausible, that somebody was 6'4 instead of 5'2. But either way, the state does not have to prove exactly where Alec Murdoch was standing when he fired this weapon, just that it was him who fired this weapon. So those discussions created no reasonable doubt. Next, the happy, loving family. You can go into that. That was another one I had listed. And then another one is that Alec Murdoch was at the kennels, admittedly, at 8:47. But at 8:49, when the murders took place, he was nowhere near there, couldn't hear it, didn't know, didn't see anybody. Lights on. Did the people walk up? Did they drive up? Was there another car there? He's totally unaware of the surroundings where he is when these murders take place. He was on location when the murders take place. There's no doubt about that. We know that. So his story had to change, that he went back to the main house. Because if not, then what lie can he possibly tell at this point to get him out of this situation? There are also some questions. And at the end of first close, it's always good to kind of hit what the defense is coming. You know, the M&M defense, or the M&M offense, I would call it, from anybody that's seen 8 Mile. Just the great battle rap when he takes everything. I know everything you can say about me. Yeah, I am white trash. I do live in a trailer park or whatever it is. You know, he goes through that whole thing. I always like to do a little bit of that in my first close. And so that's why I'd hit unreasonable doubts, because you know they're going to make those arguments. You know they are. And then number two, I'd say, and we still have some questions for Alec Murdoch. If you didn't do this, if you did not commit these crimes, why lie? Why go to mom's house after dinner at 9 o'clock instead of right after work, closest in time when Ms. Mixon told you your mom wasn't doing well, so come see her? Why lie about the 911 call? Why lie to the 911 operator? Where are the only two guns that would match the weapons used in this case? Why are those the only two Murdoch family guns that are missing? We brought all 25 other guns in here that don't match, because those are all the guns that were not ditched, hidden, concealed, whatever. I wouldn't say whatever, but you know, whatever argument he wants to make. Where are the clothes? Why had nobody ever seen them again? Common sense plays a big part in this. And more whys. And the most important pieces of this case that show why it was Alec Murdoch, only Alec Murdoch, nobody else, and it couldn't have been anybody else, and it wasn't anybody else. Not a single other person's DNA was found on anything at the scene. Nobody else's tracking devices, cell phones, cars, pings off of the satellite towers. Nobody else's devices put them at the scene of this crime except for Alec Murdoch. The victim's tracking devices, cell phone, camera, video, Snapchat, put nobody else at the scene except for Paul, Maggie, and Alec Murdoch. We had so many people come to the stand and confirm those were the three people and the only three people at the scene of the crime. Alec Murdoch confirmed it. Nobody else was there when he left, apparently at 8:47, 2 minutes before the murders happened. You can see how far, and you went to see the property, how far the entrance is from the kennels. Is it really possible and plausible that he was able to get inside with the TV on, lay down his head for some kind of nap before you would hear a car driving up? Only Murdoch was there, and only the Murdoch family guns were matched as cycling through the same casings as the shots that killed Paul and Maggie. Only Alec Murdoch found their bodies that night. Only Alec Murdoch knew what time he needed to have an alibi for. Only Alec Murdoch tried to create that alibi after an hour of not using his phone. He never used his phone more than from 9:06 to 10 o'clock. And literally, no one else had blood on their hands except Alec Murdoch. He wants you to believe it was just on the fingertips, but the evidence shows a whole lot more. Something like that, you know, some kind of theory or theme at the end to say his blood is on their hands. No matter how hard he tried to wash it off or something like that. You know, you want to end with some gripping moment like that as the prosecution. So, you know, they have a lot of things. And again, as I'm doing this, a lot of people in the chat are saying, no, what about this? What about this? What about that? And I agree with you. There's lots of holes to be poked and lots of reasonable doubt that I think the defense could hit. But if you're the state, you got to go with something like this. You cannot try to tackle every single thing that happened in this case. You give them a timeline that you think the evidence fits with, and you go with that one timeline, that one series of events, that one way that this happened. That's your only chance. If you give 10 different ways, and like, sure, their expert said, sure, it could be two shooters. Well, then if it's two shooters, you can't convict this guy. All right. So I don't have as much time as I usually do today. So I'm going to do about probably 10 minutes of questions. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. The lawyers on the case will do a much, much, much better job than I did. They're living this case. They're eating this case. They're breathing this case. This is their case. So expect much better than that. Much more structured, much more organized, much more detailed. Expect much better, but that's how I would do it. Something like that. A lot of new members here. I think Nicole Wheeler was at it again, gifting a bunch of memberships. So welcome to all the new members I saw pop up, which is always fun. And it is March 1st today. So we got to start thinking about our March members only video, which is always fun. So welcome everybody. Azam, I have been a rewatch crew a lot lately and rewatched at 1.75 speed. Your live stream sounds different to me now, Peter. LOL. Thanks so much for your time, day and night. It is funny when you switch that up, right? Rosie, woo, a Euro-friendly time. Yeah, that was also kind of cool about this time difference, is different crowd can come and check it out and the other people can watch later. Rebecca, since the jury has not seen Alec in handcuffs, will he be handcuffed today while at Moselle? I don't think he's going. I could be wrong, but I don't think he's going to be there. Keely, Moselle equals main house. Previously said sold main home. But I don't think they sold it prior to June 7th, did they? I could be wrong about that. But I thought they still had it, but then they were transitioning to Moselle because there was like a fire or something there. Thank you, C. Reed. Rosie, in my eyes, Alex has zero value or concept of money and was consequently a slave to it. But all evidence shows how much he valued family. I agree with you. Lee McCoy, do you think the judge would do an Allen charge? I know someone who got murder OT on appeal in Iowa because the judge did this Allen charge late in deliberations. I think it depends on how you do it. I don't see a problem with it. Malleus, sorry, couldn't ask yesterday. Poot's main push on cross versus the lawyer was bias, 100%. Bias is explicitly listed in instructions. Could both lawyers thought the battle is about targeting a witness as biased as thus for lay jury member automatically excluded? No, not automatically excluded, but for a juror member, they can give it less weight or totally disregard it. That's what the instruction says. And that's why bias is so important and why I thought that makes sense for Poot to go after bias. Anna, King Beck, what came out today about Koberger? So we are going to be recording something for Koberger probably tomorrow while the jury will be deliberating. We'll drop a Koberger update. Laura, is CW able to lean on the podium for closing? I will pull my hair out. Annoy anyone else? Is it normal? I felt like he was being egotistical. Peter, have you seen this? Yes, I have. It almost looks more like exhaustion to me. He's just so tired and frustrated and annoyed going back and forth. Anne Marie, I made it live. I received my prize, Peter. Thank you. This trial has my head spinning. I don't think he did it. I can't commit to not guilty just yet. Yeah. Apparently the 150,000 subscriber giveaways just arrived. So it's been a while. And that's why we're changing merch sites. We're in the process here. Ugh, I am lost. Thank you for the super sticker. Judy, oh my gosh, you are changing my mind. You're good. Thank you. And I think that's the point. Closing arguments can change your mind, but most jurors are going to be pretty locked in, I think, at this point. Nicole, I've been leaning not guilty the whole time, and now you're making me rethink it. Why are you more effective than the prosecution? I don't think that I am. I think it's a calm environment. Nobody's objecting to me, right? I'm able to kind of show and do whatever I want. It's much more stressful, much harder to do it in trial. So give them grace. I'm sure they're going to do a good job in closing. It's very hard to try cases. Very hard. Tani, why would he go to such extreme measure to protect his boy and then murder him? Makes no sense to me. I agree with you. April, he said he messed with Paul's phone before putting it down. You can call 911 without needing the code. I've done it multiple times. So you're saying he should have used Paul's phone to call 911? I don't know. John, I give you props for trying, Peter, but still manning this prosecution's case is almost an impossible task. Yeah, I thank you, Mama Bear. I was thinking of a lot of reasonable doubt when I was going through this. Rasvig, a very good closing, but it doesn't sway me away from thinking he's not guilty. The state has not proven that to me. Too many unanswered questions. Hi from Norway. I agree with you. GB, you all need to watch Garen Thumb's video, shotgun versus human head. He shoots bird, buckshot, and slugs into ballistics head at point blank range. No way a father did that to his son. It's on YouTube. I agree. I mean, I believed the testimony about his relationship with his family. I felt like that was real because a lot of the state's witnesses also agreed with that. And then to think about how brutal this was, it's tough. It's tough. Bev, nice closing, counselor. I remain a solid not guilty, but appreciate hearing a well-crafted, cogent argument and seeing your legal skills in action. Thank you, Bev. Amy, that Eminem 8 Mile reference deserves a super chat, right? I mean, that's just the greatest. I mean, that's some of the, I on YouTube sometimes will just listen to those rap battle. I'm a big rap battle guy, like beef. I like that kind of stuff. I like diss tracks. So I'm into that kind of stuff anyways. Tori, love that you just used Eminem right now. You're amazing. Makes me feel more like one of us. You're still the GOAT. Absolutely one of you. Absolutely. Jury just left Moselle, Sherry said. Okay, so they're getting back, I think, around 11:30. So we're going to be out of here very soon. Caitlin, I was a firm not guilty, but you have me reconsidering. And the jury will go back and they'll discuss it. Hope, new to your channel. Love the 8 Mile movie reference, LOL. See, you come for the law talk, you stay for the rap talk, you know? Thanks, Hope. Anastasia, so many nonsensical pieces to this case. Boils down to the investigation was sloppy and prosecution couldn't make the evidence fit their narrative. I think that's what we're going to hear from the defense. Melody, in a lawsuit, the first to speak seems right until someone comes forward and cross-examines. Proverbs 18:17. Ain't that the truth? And that's the point of cross-examination. Terry, I believe he's guilty for all the reasons you just stated. His lies caught up with him and as much as they possibly could. Even if you don't feel the prosecution proved it, do you believe he did it? I don't, actually. I think if he wanted it to happen, he would have hired somebody to do it. So I'd be more inclined to have believed some kind of conspiracy to commit this crime. Rashenda, you covered it perfectly. Just the facts. Thank you. Patrick Mott, you give Waters and Poot way too much credit. It's hard. I know how hard it is. Emily, thank you for the super chat. Ranel, wow, a closing argument like that. I don't want to be the defense in any of your cases, Peter. Well planned and executed. Thank you. Rass, I can't judge based on other bad acts. I would be afraid other killers walk free. That's not fair to Mag and Paul if they loved AM. I agree with you. And that's why you noticed in my closing, I barely mentioned them. I only mentioned them when it came to motive because I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. And I just don't agree with doing that. I can't even do it in a fake closing. Thank you, Nancy. Elaine, how long do you anticipate closings to be? I think the defense said 2 hours is what they expected. I expect the states to go longer. My guess is all afternoon. So, I mean, it's 11. They get back at 11:30. They take an hour and a half lunch break. So 1 o'clock, maybe 4 hours. Paul, Alex could still be one of the two shooters, though. I agree with you, but I don't think that's what the state has charged it as. Welcome. Adventures of Aaron. Why is no one looking at Kiefer Sutherland. He's 5'4 and always angry. Is he really 5'4? Stephanie, if you had your own closing, you would change. If you heed your own closing, you would change your mind and say guilty. Great job. Yeah, but I know there's a lot of holes in it because I'm the one that thought through it the way that I said it. Rebecca, I don't think he did it, but I do think he knows who did it. P.S. Love your cup. Thank you. And these are kind of similar to the 200,000 subscriber giveaway that we're going to do if this trial ever ends. Anthony, I'm not sure if you have answered this yet. How long do you anticipate the jury will come up with a verdict? A part of me wants to say by close of business Friday, to not make it take over the weekend, but because it could be a hung jury, it could go into next week, but I'll guess by the end of the day, Friday right now, if I had to guess. Allison, thankful for your channel, not guilty for me. And again, whether you agree or disagree, we just like to hear your opinion. Susan Steele, thank you for the super sticker. Anastasia, I don't actually believe he did it either, although I think he suspects who may have, and then may have connections and stuff like that with them, which makes it difficult. Thank you for the super sticker. Azam and Peggy Ann with the Harry Potter minion. Thank you for the super sticker. I appreciate everyone who decided to join me in this impromptu morning breakfast live. Get to the live stream. Get in there. Let me know what you think. I'll be on Twitter, I'm sure, talking through the closing arguments. And we will talk again tonight, breaking down closing arguments. Brian Koberger update coming tomorrow. Thank you, Janet. Brilliant closing you made. Killing by Alec. Plausible, believable, doable. I could vote guilty now, not before. I appreciate you guys. This little thought exercise we were able to do together. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments. We'll try to do something like this each trial we break down. Barb, welcome. And I'm out of here. You guys are the best. Please hit that like button on the way out. And thank Nicole again for gifting the memberships. I'll see you all tonight. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Lawyer You Know podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, which I hope you did, here's what to do next. Give it a share, rate, and review the show on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify, and make sure you subscribe to the show in the listening app of your choice. Follow me on all social media platforms at Tragos Law and join the Lawyer You Know YouTube channel and community where you can ask me questions live on all of these cases. If you've got an idea for a specific topic or you have a personal legal question on an injury case, whether it's a car accident, trip and fall, wrongful death, or catastrophic injury case, please email me at lawyeryouknow@gmail.com. All of these links I just mentioned are included in the show notes section of this episode. So until next time, I'm Peter Tragos.